Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen. It's up, it's up. And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way,
it's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio Season 9.
Love at first listen.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
With new segments, correspondence, and a new sound.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge Podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge Podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Informed opinions, but different opinions. Let's talk to the pros. Welcome in, everybody, to Fantasy Pros. This is the Fantasy Football Podcast. It is me, Joey P, Joe Pizzapia. And with us today is Justin Boone, the lead fantasy analyst from The Score. Our old pal is back again. And Andrew Erickson is here as well, Mr. Big Pot Energy himself, off of his big fantasy feud victory. So he's taking the victory lap here on the show today. And today's show is a very important one. We're going to talk about mid-round running backs and wide receiver ranking debates, some guys there that are outside the first round or two that we need to examine the differences of opinion. And I like differences of opinion, and I like bringing all these people together. Boone, you're one of my favorite people. You know that. They say I'm not supposed to have favorites, but that's a lie because I do. And you're one of them. And it's great to have you back on the show. And I know you know Andrew as well. You had Andrew on when he was still in high school, I think it was, right? You had him on your podcast a couple years ago.
It sure seemed like he was calling me from the cafeteria. Yeah, I think that's where he signed on from. It was kind of funny, though. You know, whenever you have people on, you guys have the same thing. You got to put, you know, a few things down, make sure you got headphones, all this sort of stuff. And I remember when Andrew logged on, I was like, are there like a ton? Are you like in a meeting? Like, what's going on? Like, there's so much noise behind you. And he was very apologetic, and we ended up figuring it out, and it worked out great. But like we were joking about before the show, it's not about the look, it's not about the sound, it's about the information that we're bringing here, right? That's the main thing.
Well, I don't know, then I'm out, because I'm just here for the look and the sound. I told you, that's what I'm here for. I am here for the appeal of this face right here, which is obviously not true. Andrew Erickson, I know one of the big reasons you came to work here at Fantasy Pros was the meal plan that we have, obviously, fresh out of college and all that stuff. Just kidding. Andrew's actually 47 years old. People don't realize that. But Erickson, obviously, you know, you come a long way here in these last few years. You're a Fantasy Feud champion. So things are going pretty well for you. You must be pretty confident for this rankings debate you're going to have with one of the big boys here in Justin Boone.
Yeah, no, I'm really excited to talk it up with Justin Boone. I know Boone is one of Fantasy Pros' highest ranked rankers every single year. Mm-hmm. I know that. Have you taken it down before, Boone? Have you been finished number one? I know you've finished
2019. Okay. I got the gold star. I got the first place. Yep.
Yeah. So there it was. And Dan Harris isn't here for you to kick around anymore. So if it makes you feel better, you can make fun of me a few times in the show just for old time's sake, and we could get that going. But before we get into those names, I want to remind everybody right now, our cheat sheet creator is available at fantasypros.com/draftwizard. This is one of our amazing tools. Again, we keep talking about all the tools we have. You have our expert sync feature, which basically syncs up our stuff to your drafts, no matter where you're drafting, right? And the cheat sheet creator is something you can use where you can pull your favorite experts or just your favorite expert, whether it be Justin Boone, myself, Andrew Erickson, a combination of all of us. Every time we update our rankings, your cheat sheets for the Draft Sync software will get updated as well. And you can use it not only in the Draft Sync software, but also with Draft Assistant, with Draft Simulator also. So even if you're running mock drafts, you can use the cheat sheet creator. And again, this is available at fantasypros.com/draftwizard. And as I've been telling you for weeks now, and I want to keep driving it home, people say, well, you know, do I really need the premium features of Fantasy Pros? And I'm telling you, we're just basically giving them to you. Here's what you do. You go to fantasypros.com/offers, and only our MVP and Hall of Fame subscribers can use our cheat sheet creator that I was just talking about and some of our My Playbook features to manage all your teams in season. You got three or four teams. You want to set lineups from Fantasy Pros from one spot instead of going from Yahoo to Fantrax to Sleeper and all these different places. You don't have to live that way. I'm telling you, we've got it all here for you, and you can get 12 free months right now of our premium subscription to Fantasy Pros with an amazing deal at fantasypros.com/offers. You check out one of our partners, you make a deposit there, you go ahead and make a couple DFS entries, you go ahead, you can make a little deposit there, make a little wager or two. Next thing you know, you get the 12 free months of the premium product. That helps you preseason, in season. It helps you with your real life, I've been told. That's what I've been told. So look, check it out right now. Again, that's fantasypros.com/offers. And then you can use those cheat sheets as well. Let's get into the football now, because now I've basically given everything away for free. So let's give away some more stuff for free here. Let's start about these ranking debates. And again, these are some guys a little outside of that top 10 range of players here at their position that we think maybe, just maybe, we should have a difference of opinion. And I want to start here with Cam Akers. Right now, Boone, you have Cam Akers at RB19. Andrew Erickson has him at RB12. So clearly you're not quite as high on Cam Akers. Walk me through, what are your concerns and why you have him maybe ranked a little bit further down the trough than Andrew does?
Well, my guess is that this is just going to come down to the risk that you want to take with him, right? Because is there potential that he could be great this year? Absolutely. Is there potential that he gets nowhere near his previous form before the Achilles tear? Absolutely. Do we know which one of those it's going to be? We really don't, right? It was so impressive that he came back late last season, but he clearly wasn't himself. He clearly wasn't the same version of Cam Akers that we expected to see last year before the injury. And we shouldn't have expected that at all, right? It was 6-7 months after he tore it. So the fact that he came back was great, but it doesn't really tell us that much about what we could look to moving forward. And I had Edwin Porras, the medical analyst at Fantasy Points. I had him on my show a few weeks back, and he kind of walked me through the surgery that they did. And it was slightly different, I guess, than some of the other Achilles tear surgeries. And that allowed him to be weight bearing a lot quicker. It allowed him to kind of come back sooner. But once again, it really doesn't tell you that much about what this could mean moving forward. One of the things that I didn't understand that he explained to me, and I'm going to refer to Edwin a lot during this Cam Akers conversation here, but he described to me that when you have an Achilles tear, the way they do the surgery is they remodel the Achilles, the tendon, essentially, and that it's never going to be the exact same. Now, could it be close to the same? Yes. Could it be nowhere near the same? Also, yes. That's why I kind of keep waffling on this one. So I do think it's a good sign that he came back last year, but we've seen a lot of these other guys with these Achilles tears take 2 years, sometimes multiple years, sometimes they never get it back, right? And for Cam Akers, he's going to be 1 year removed from this injury. I don't know that he is going to be ready to go and anywhere close to what we would like to see him be at the start of this season. So that's kind of where it starts for me. And that's why I've gone out and gotten a lot of Darrell Henderson again this year. I think that's really important. I also think it's worth mentioning that it's not like we're talking about a player who was an established star before this happened, right? Like, this that's is a guy fair, that we were right? kind of projecting to become maybe one of the next stars. He had a pretty good end to his rookie season, but it's not like he had multiple years of production that we can look back to and say, all right, well, if he's 80% of that, he'll still be fine. So that's where I'm a little worried. And when you look back at some of these other recent examples, Deonta Foreman, kind of took him 2 years plus before he was back and kind of really doing anything of note in the league. So I like that what we've heard has been pretty positive. And I'm not shocked at those numbers in the playoffs. I mean, when Edwin is on my show, he went through all the running backs in the playoffs last year that had at least 20 attempts. Akers ranked last in expected points added per attempt, last in points above replacement, third to last in expected points added above average, and third to last in points earned per play. But once again, is that that surprising for a guy that's 6 or 7 months removed from an Achilles surgery?
Well, you think he did himself a disservice by trying to come back? You know, it's like the football player he wants to come back.
Fantasy-wise,
like, had fantasy he not come
stock,
back,
yeah.
Is it one of those things where absence makes the heart grow fonder? We haven't seen him. We're hopeful that he's healed well, and we don't know what to see, as opposed to seeing something that doesn't look like the last Cam Akers we saw, even though he was trying to gut it out. You think that's also kind of hurt his stock collectively in the market?
Yeah, for sure. And okay. For me, just looking at what we know from some of these previous ones,
I would have more faith that in 2023 we might see Akers be something closer to what we hope that he could be before, as opposed to kind of expecting just 1 year removed from the injury, him showing up in week one or really at any point this season and being that top 12, even top 15 kind of guy. Like you said, I have him at RB19. I almost want to move him lower at this point, to be honest, the more I look at it, just because I do have those concerns.
All right, Andrew, you have less concerns. You have him at RB12. So does this come back to, it's just as simple as offensive ecosystems for you?
Well, I think the offensive ecosystem is really great for Cam Akers. And, you know, the thing, obviously he ranked in the bottom of pretty much every metric you look at during his, you know, the few games that he ended up playing last year. But what he ranked number one in the NFL was yards after contact. 95% of his yards came after contact. So yes, his numbers were horrible. Not all his fault. Like, the Rams offensive line was not running efficiently. They were not opening up holes. And if you look at and you compare his numbers compared to Michelle and Henderson over the same time span, they're all bad. Like, they're all bad across the board. So I don't really look at the efficiency as like, oh, he's washed. Like, he's not explosive. It's like none of the Rams running backs were explosive during that period of time. So and for the Achilles injury, I guess for me, it's like he already came back from it. Like, the biggest thing and biggest hurdle was just him coming back in the first place. So he's already set himself almost in a different category than some of these other running backs that we were expecting him to miss the entire season. Like, no one thought he was going to come back. And yet the Rams still didn't put him on injured reserve. Like, they were not going to do that. They were going to make sure that they had him available in the playoffs. And the minute that he was able to, you know, take on a football, they're like putting him in the lineup. Like, it didn't matter what Henderson was doing, what Michelle was doing. It's like, nope. If Akers at 75%, we're putting him in. Like, he's playing in this game. And that's why I want Cam Akers, because I think that Sean McVay views him as his RB1 in this offense. And last year, the RB1, whoever it was, whether it was Henderson, whether it was Michelle, 20 plus touches per game. And the other thing that I want to hit on is the touchdown upside. You know, looking at Henderson and Michelle last year, they combined for the second most red zone touches among running backs, but they had the lowest rushing touchdown percentage because Matthew Stafford was basically just throwing it to Cooper Kupp every single time they were in the red zone. That's going to regress. Like, Cooper Kupp's not going to catch 16 touchdowns again, which means if the Rams offense is still good, which we all believe it to still be, those touchdowns are going to now revert from passing to rushing, which is going to benefit Cam Akers. So I think he has double digit touchdown upside, and he's got youth on his side too. So I think that he can come back from this injury and be a monster in 2022.
All right, let's go to a guy who does not necessarily have youth on his side right now. It's Ezekiel Elliott. Boone, you have him at RB18. Erickson, not buying it. He is at RB25. So the confidence level obviously has waned a little bit with Ezekiel Elliott, but at 18, that's where you feel comfortable with him, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I can't believe that I'm supposed to be the one arguing for Zeke here, because if anything, when I first looked at it, I was like, oh, they're definitely going to have me be the guy to talk him down, right? I'm guessing that we're both probably below ECR on him. I feel like he's got to be at least a couple spots ahead of where I have him at 18. And it does almost feel wrong to have Zeke this low in your rankings, right? When you're just looking at the name and where he is, it's kind of like there's no way. Like,
well, he's Ezekiel at 16 Elliott in the ECR, just FYI.
Okay, so almost exactly like I predicted there, a couple spots there ahead of me. But you're looking at a guy who, you know, barely cracked 1,000 rushing yards last year, and he had the 17 games to do it. We have Tony Pollard just consistently, in my mind, looking like the better back, the more explosive back out there when they're both on the field. I know Zeke has the huge contract, but how many of these huge running back contracts have we seen lately where they don't look so great a year or two later, right? And I know even when the Zeke contract got signed, people were already saying, like, what are they doing? This is such a foolish move. And I think they probably would be better off right now if they had just kind of given the reins to Tony Pollard there. And maybe that's going to happen this year. We'll see. But some people do blame what happened to him last year on the injuries, that he played through the injury. He suffered a torn PCL on his knee. That was around week 4 and just kind of gutted it out the rest of the year. And he still finished. He was tied for RB13 in fantasy points per game at half PPR, right? So it wasn't all terrible last season for him. It didn't look great. So right. I think this is a tough one. I think Pollard is going to be more involved. I thought that, you know, having a 27-year-old Ezekiel Elliott down in that kind of low end RB2 range at RB18 would be lower than most, but Andrew clearly hates him even more.
Yes. So this isn't a matter of, I like this person doesn't like this person. This is a matter of Boone doesn't like him and Andrew doesn't like him even less. So Andrew, let's go to your ranking here at RB25. Walk me through this. Tell me, why have you bottomed him out to that fringe of RB2/RB3 range? Why is it so far down?
because I don't want people to draft him. I really think that Zeke is a
okay, it's fair.
We were talking about this in our Slack channel, like talking about landmine players, mm-hmm. where you're almost attached to them and you can't get rid of them. Like, there's never going to be a time in the season where you can just cut Zeke. Like, it's not going to be able to happen. Like, you're going to have to start him every single week. And it's a sunk, it's the sunk cost fallacy where you have to start Zeke because you invested a round four pick in him and he just continues to score 8 points, 10 points, 13 points. So at the end of the season, oh, okay, he was RB 18. Okay, cool. Like, and that's where Justin has him ranked. And, you know, Justin's the better ranker. So maybe that is where he ends up finishing as RB 18. But the ride to get there is not fun. Like, it is not going to be a fun ride because it's going to be touchdown dependent for Zeke. You talk about Tony Pollard, you know, looking just at the last half of last year. I mean, Zeke was only scoring one fantasy point per game more than Pollard. And Zeke scored five more touchdowns than Tony Pollard did. Like, who's going to catch more passes this year, Tony Pollard or Zeke? Like, last year it was Zeke, and Zeke was running a lot of routes. But, you know, the rhetoric out of camp is they want to use Pollard more in the receiving game. There's a lot of vacated targets in that offense. And Pollard is super explosive as a receiver. And Zeke was 57th in yards per route run in the second half of last year, despite having the sixth most targets. So Zeke is out there catching the ball and falling down. Like, he's not elusive. He's not breaking tackles. And I just don't see the appeal besides the touchdowns. And touchdowns are the hardest thing to project every year. Like, we know Dallas' offense will be good, but is it going to be the number one scoring offense for 2 years straight based on all the guys they lost, based on the offensive line having a lot of turnover? Mm-hmm. It's just like, I kind of just look at him like, what are we doing? Like, he's such an obvious dead zone back that it's like, I just want to, I posted this on a thread. It's like, don't draft Zeke. Like, he's you know, I look at him, it reminds me so much of like a Todd Gurley in Atlanta. You know, starts the season out hot, scoring touchdowns left and right. And by the end of the year, you're like, he's on the sell high, every fantasy football article, sell high, sell high. That's going to be Zeke this year. And you know what's going to happen? No one's going to want him.
Well, to support Andrew's argument too, I will say some of the biggest mistakes that I've ever made in my fantasy career have been when I convinced myself that that older running back, he's still got another year or two in him, right? And
hey, man, I was down on Zeke before being down on Zeke was cool last summer. Everybody, all Cowboy Nation hated me until they started to watch him play and went, oh, I kind of see what you're saying. But that name brand value is very tough to shake, especially in those casual players. You know, this casual fantasy enthusiast, they see the name, they think, oh, this is warm and fuzzy. I know what I'm getting with Zeke, but you're not getting the same thing you got 4 years ago. Let's take a quick break in the action to tell you about Pristine Auction. PristineAuction.com is the most trusted sports memorabilia auction site with an A-plus Better Business Bureau rating and auctions over Pristine Auction starting at just $1 each day. There's over 1,000 autographed items available so you can get signed, authentic, signatured items at affordable prices. And just last week, an autographed Justin Herbert jersey sold for just $110. What? Deals like this are happening all the time on PristineAuction.com, and they've got just about every player you could want, including Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes, and many more. Every item on PristineAuction.com comes with a certificate of authenticity from the industry's most reputable authenticators, and you can upgrade your collection of signed memorabilia today and get $10 off your first item whenever you use that promo code FANTASYPROS. Again, that's one word, FANTASYPROS. Be sure to sign up now because there are deals ending every single day. Again, that's code FANTASYPROS for $10 off your first piece of signed memorabilia at PristineAuction.com. And now, back to the action. All right, let's go to another running back here, David Montgomery. And this is one that I really want to talk about because, again, a lot of different opinions. Andrew, we'll start with you on this one. You have him at RB21. Boone has him at RB16, so he's a little higher. So how do you feel about David Montgomery this year? When you saw Khalil Herbert look good in this offense, you've seen Montgomery just be okay. He had that good run a couple of years ago to finish out the season, but it's been more disappointing than not. So how do you evaluate Montgomery coming into this season?
Well, the reason he's being drafted and ranked like where he is kind of in that RB2 range, it's basically just the projected volume. You know, that's the reason why he's going where his ADP. No one is out here standing for Montgomery as, oh man, this guy so good as running
back.
You
actually have him higher than ECR. Did you know that? He's 17 in ECR and you've got him at 16. Actually, Boone has him at 16.
Yes, Boone has him at 16.
So that's kind of interesting. He's I can't wait to hear that argument. So
right.
Go ahead.
So I don't think Dave Montgomery is a special running back. That's my opinion. Maybe that's not consensus, but that's my opinion on Dave Montgomery. And, you know, the volume is obviously what's attractive in the Bears backfield. Like, he's gotten the volume the last two seasons. That's why he's been, you know, a back end RB1 over the past two seasons. But now we have a new coaching staff in here. So we could see something different in the backfield, seeing how touches are distributed. When Khalil Herbert got to play last year, the dude looked really good. And you honestly could not tell the difference who was out there between him and Dave Montgomery. And I would argue Herbert is the more explosive of the two running backs. And when you look at Montgomery as, I think most people are viewing him as, okay, this guy can be my rock solid RB2 every single week, put him in my RB2 slot and we're good to go. But last year, he finished as a top 24 running back in less than half of his games, in 46%. So I'm investing my running back two draft spot with a guy that may not even finish an RB2 in half of his games next year. And the Bears offense, that's the other thing. The offensive line is horrible. You know, what are the question marks with Justin Fields as a mobile quarterback? Okay, how much is Dave Montgomery going to be involved in the passing game? So there's just a lot of question marks. And I really don't think at the end of the day, if I take a wide receiver going where Dave Montgomery is being drafted, I'm going to regret that decision. I don't think Dave Montgomery is going to bury my team for not drafting him instead of drafting one of these receivers, these breakout wide receivers in the middle rounds that I just can't get enough of.
All right, Boone, you are one spot higher than the ECR. Again, it doesn't sound like a lot, but it is important to note, where are your concerns with this Bears offense and possibly Khalil Herbert, not to mention, you know, David Montgomery's summer of performances himself that Andrew just pointed out that there's some times where he is not as reliable as you might think.
Yeah, I think what Andrew said, a lot of those things are difficult to argue. I think a lot of that stuff is true, but a lot of them, there's two sides to the coin, right? You have a new coaching staff. Well, maybe they're going to bring in more, you know, two running backs. Maybe they're going to use them more. Maybe they're going to be a significantly better coaching staff than what we had with Matt Nagy, right? And I think that really hurt this offense pretty bad the last couple of years. Just one, we don't even have to get into that aspect of it. We could spend a whole show on that. But that offense was just absolutely awful the last couple seasons. We talk about Justin Fields being a rushing quarterback. You could also look at Justin Fields. Wow, could he raise the level of this offense? I know they didn't go out and get him a lot of weapons this offseason, but he is the kind of player that does have the upside where he could kind of lift all boats around. That's possible. I'm not saying that's going to happen, but definitely possible there. And when I look at Montgomery, I agree with you. He's one of these guys. The last couple of years, I've talked a lot about Montgomery, about Josh Jacobs, these guys that maybe they don't have top five upside on the season. They're never going to compete with Christian McCaffrey or those kind of guys, but they could sneak into the low end RB1 ranks on the year, even in points per game. They can get up there into that range. Now this year, Josh Jacobs, a whole other story. We're not talking about him today. I'm off him now, but I'm still on Montgomery. There's a couple reasons why. One of the things is he's kind of been the exception to the rule in terms of he's continued to produce. I like the numbers that he's had the last couple of years here. He finished as the RB8 in PPR fantasy points per game. He had 17.7 fantasy points per game in 2020. Last year, a little bit lower, RB19. I know, as Andrew mentioned, you know, a lot of the games there, he's not even in the top 24. I'd be curious to see across all running backs what that looks like, that number kind of looks like, what the percentage would be. The top guys, obviously, they're going to be there quite a bit. But I think anybody kind of outside the top 12 or so, you're probably going to see those numbers kind of drop, or they're not necessarily going to be in the top 24 every week. But one of the big things with Montgomery that we've seen the last 2 years, and Joe, you kind of touched on it, is when he has these easy matchups, when he has these good stretches, he really comes through. And he did it 2 years ago down the stretch. I think he probably helped a lot of fantasy managers win titles. He did it again last year. He had some easy matchups down the stretch and put in some good games there. And everybody has their own strength of schedule matrix. Ours at the score, it has the Bears running backs having the easiest fantasy strength of schedule this season. So I actually like this setup for Montgomery pretty well. He's a leader in that locker room. When you look at the new coaching staff come in, that was one of the things they mentioned right off the bat, was that Montgomery was one of the leaders on the team. And I joked on my show recently, you're a leader on the team until you're not, right? Until they're done with you and they cast you aside, and then the next guy comes up and he's a leader. But there's been a lot of talk about Montgomery being kind of one of the focal points of that offense, one of the leaders in that locker room, and having the new coaching staff come in and say that right away, that gives me a little more confidence. And I mean, where you're getting them right now, it's a decent price. And yes, depending on your build, like Andrew's saying, I probably myself would also lean towards a lot of those upside receivers in that range, but that just depends how you're building your team. If you don't have that running back yet, you go receivers and tight ends early. Mm-hmm. I don't mind grabbing Montgomery at that point.
Well, I'm an early receiver builder. Everybody knows this right now this year. And that's one of these guys. That's why I'm so happy we're talking about him, because he falls into this group of those running backs that are floating around there, whether it be the Connors, Elliott, Montgomery. These guys are floating around there. Travis Etienne, AJ Dillon. I seem to, you know, having to make those decisions between those guys. And there's a safety that seems like it's there for David Montgomery. But I think it's important to ask ourselves the question, is that a false sense of security? You bring up a lot of good points, Justin, about that refresh of the coaching staff. Maybe they can get a little bit more out of him and maybe out of the offense altogether. Certainly nowhere to go but up in that range. Speaking about going up, Javonte Williams. Andrew, have you heard of this guy? He plays for the Denver Broncos. Javonte Williams, again, not a huge divide between you guys, but more a player I want to talk about because this is a player I've been very excited about. We talk about the eye test. To me, he's an eye test kind of guy. Erickson, you have him at RB17. Boone has him at RB14. So Erickson, you're a little bit lower still on Javonte Williams. And I guess it's always the same argument, right? It's always about, well, Melvin Gordon's there and well, the split and well. How much, though, do we put into the new quarterback and that new quarterback being Russell Wilson and this new coaching staff and maybe more scoring potential that maybe he can still overcome any sort of split to be a better fantasy investment than people realize?
Well, I think the first thing to hit on with the scoring potential is we don't even know if Javonte Williams is the goal line back for the Broncos. Like Fair. Last year, Melvin Gordon had more red zone touches. Now, does that change with the new coaching staff? Like those are the big question marks. And that's why it is the question marks that are the reason why I'm hesitant to buy Javonte Williams. I think that we're both lower than ECR on Javonte, where Boone has him at 14.
Yes, you are. He is
17.
At 13.
Yeah,
that's
so,
where he is
so
in consensus.
Both of us are definitely preaching some caution to the fact that you can't ignore like that Melvin Gordon is part of this backfield. I mean, before they signed him, Javonte Williams was like, I don't know where I had him like sixth or something. Like he was up really, really high. I was like, I was ready for juggernaut Javonte to break out all over the place in year two. So I was really hyped about it. But you look at how good Melvin Gordon was, how efficient he was last year as a running back, and he's going to command touches. Like he's literally come out and said that he's not going to lay down to RB1 supremacy in this backfield to Javonte Williams. So Gordon's going to come with every shot he's got to try to earn opportunities in this offense. And considering where Nathaniel Hackett has come from, Green Bay, where they embraced two running backs, like they liked having a two running back system. So I don't think it's fair of us to just kind of put Javonte and be like, well, he was an RB1 beforehand. They added Gordon like, oh, Gordon's old. Like, let's just forget that he's there. It's Javonte breakout season. Like so many misses I've had are on second year running backs where I just assume, okay, they're just going to take the next step. Like they're just going to break out. You know, Josh Jacobs, oh, he's going to finally catch passes. You know, it took so much longer than I ever envisioned. Antonio Gibson last year. Oh, he's going to be CMC. Nope, didn't happen. So like Javonte, I feel like when people are ranking him as an RB1, which is not necessarily represented by ECR, but I think some ADPs, I've seen him go really high. I think they're just assuming, yeah, it's his time to take over. But, you know, Russell Wilson historically has not been one to target running backs. There's a lot of receivers on this offense that they could feed, tight ends. So for me, it's just I'm going to be cautious. And it sucks because Javonte Williams is one of the players that I'm afraid because, you know, even though I didn't know it at the time, if Melvin Gordon goes down, you know, Javonte Williams is going to make me eat it. Like he's going to go off and that's going to hurt. So Javonte is definitely someone that, you know, I don't want to fade the talent because he's an uber talented running back. But at the same time, you know, running backs in fantasy, it's volume. And right now, Melvin Gordon looks like he's in line for 200 plus touches, which means Javonte Williams won't get to, you know, 300 or 280 touches, which is what we want to see from our RB1s.
Boone, do you think we're living too much in the past of what happened last year under a different regime with Melvin Gordon? And Melvin Gordon is another year older with another year on the tires at the running back position. And is this the situation that despite the fact that, and Andrew is right, you know, sometimes we want these things to happen and they don't always come true. Is this the one exception to the rule because the talent is there to really be a fantasy game changer that you have to almost take that into account when projecting Javonte Williams this year?
Well, first off, I just want to comment on the ECR because I think sometimes in the offseason, it takes a little while for the ECR to like catch up. Maybe not everybody's heard all the most recent news and things like that. So I would guess that the ECR will be closer to where Andrew and maybe even right in between where we have him ranked at some point soon. But I really want to see what the Broncos coaching staff says kind of over the next few weeks when everybody shows up to camp and even into the preseason here, because it was clear they loved Javonte. They moved up to get him in the draft last year. And I think last season, I think we would all agree, he showed them everything they wanted to see, right? He looked fantastic out there. And like we're saying, I think I had him even higher than you. I think I had him in my top five at one point before Melvin Gordon re-signed there. So I think his time is definitely coming. The fact that Gordon, we got to look at what happened too. They didn't rush out and get Melvin Gordon and bring him back, right? Melvin Gordon kind of lingered out there for a little while. And then I don't think he had as many suitors as maybe he had hoped. And then he ended up coming back because of it. And yeah, I know he's talking up a big game that he's going to come out there and he's going to challenge for it and all that sort of stuff. But I mean, you could just look at the second half of last season, kind of what happened. We have some of the beat writers already saying that they're expecting that Javonte is going to take on a bigger role, even with Melvin Gordon back this year. But if you look at what happened last season, in the first 10 games before the Broncos week 11 bye, Javonte saw, so he was on the field for over 50% of the snaps in three of those first 10 games. After the week 11 bye, week 12 on, six of the final seven games, he was on the field for more than 50% of the offensive snaps. And not surprisingly, Javonte was the RB14 in fantasy points per game and half PPR over those last seven contests. So that's obviously where I have him ranked. I think that we could see a situation where we talked about it a second ago, where you have Pollard and Zeke. That's a totally different story. Obviously, Zeke more the established guy and all that sort of stuff. But I think this is a situation where we have a team that loves a player, that traded up to get a player, and then they have this older running back who is also kind of great insurance on a team that hopes to contend this season, and they bring him back on a cheaper deal than they probably even thought they could get him on. So he's going to be there. Andrew, I think 200 carries for him, 200 touches for him, I think that might be a little much in my opinion. I think it'll be below that number. I think he's still going to be involved, but I think Javonte is clearly going to take the lead in this backfield this season. So I like him as the high-end RB2. I'm not going to be as adventurous to put him back up into the RB1 ranks, but I think he could still have a good year. He just doesn't have the same upside unless Gordon gets hurt.
I'll be that adventurous. I have him as RB11 because I think I'm seeing the future. I'm trying to be in on the future, and I'm also seeing a world where it's not a bad thing if Melvin Gordon's presence in that backfield still exists, because it keeps Javonte Williams healthier down the stretch. And in my playoffs, that's when I want the healthiest Javonte Williams. Like, that's the dude I want over the last eight games of the season, right? That stretch run where he's a little fresher. I think Melvin Gordon's presence in some ways, it does two things. It's great. It keeps him fresher as the year goes on, potentially for a huge second half. And it suppresses his ADP a little bit, makes him a little bit more of a value. The talent, as you said, is maybe a top five guy at the position. So to me, I'm going to try to buy into that and trying to think more about the last eight games of the season as opposed to the first. But it's really good points here. And Javonte is one of those guys that it's tough to buy all the way in. I get it, everybody. But I think that's the one guy that I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to overpay for it just a tad.
Let's take a quick break in the action to tell you about Air Medcare Network. Are you prepared if the unthinkable happens? Let's talk about the best defense for the unexpected, because if a medical emergency does arise, Air Medcare Network provides members with world-class emergency air transport services to the nearest hospital with no out-of-pocket expenses. Join today and never pay a dime for your medical flight when flown by an AMCN provider. Insurance doesn't always cover the full cost of a medical emergency, so this is a great way to secure financial peace of mind for you and your family. Memberships cost as little as $85 a year for your entire household, and right now, as a Fantasy Pros listener, you'll get up to a $50 Visa or Amazon gift card with a new membership today. Visit airmedcarenetwork.com/fantasypros and use the offer code FANTASYPROS, that's one word, FANTASYPROS. No matter where you are in the game of life, an Air Medcare Network membership is a protection no one should live without, so visit once again airmedcarenetwork.com/fantasypros and use the promo code FANTASYPROS today. Now, back to the action.
All right, let's go switch gears to the wide receiver position here. Boone, we'll start with you this time. You have Tyreek Hill at wide receiver 15. Andrew Erickson, actually, no, I'm sorry. You have it wide receiver 8. Pardon me. Andrew Erickson has him at wide receiver 15. So you are still believing in Tyreek Hill. So the floor is yours. Tell us why the change of scenery keeps Tyreek Hill still as a top 10 fantasy wide receiver in your brain.
Well, I mean, we're definitely dropping him, right? Before this, he was top 5 probably in our rankings. Same kind of thing with Javonte. And then he changes teams. We look at the new situation and we bump him down a bit. But I know some people are concerned sometimes about receivers changing teams. I think that affects more of the mid-level receivers. I think we've seen a lot of the high-end guys change teams, whether it be Stephon Diggs or DeAndre Hopkins. These guys are changing teams and they're still putting up good stats right away, right? These guys are able to pull that off. I would be shocked if the Dolphins went out and got Tyreek Hill and didn't plan to make him a significant part of their offense, right? And I know I like Jaylen Waddle as much as anybody, but I mean, it's Tyreek Hill we're talking about, right? And if you want to make this a Tua against Patrick Mahomes debate, yeah, we can do that. I mean, Tua's never going to be Patrick Mahomes. We'll all agree there. No matter what Tyreek says every time someone puts a mic in front of his mouth.
The other examples you gave, Diggs ends up with Josh Allen. Turns out he's pretty good with football. And then, you know, DeAndre Hopkins ended up with Kyler Murray, who obviously from a fantasy perspective is somebody that a lot of people are very high on. So those guys all ended up in good spots. This is Tua. So that is, I think, the factor people are trying to weigh.
I think Tua is one of those guys that people have been really down on. They wanted to just discount him like from the get-go. That first season, he probably should have never played that first season. They put him in there midway through the year. After that injury he had in college, they should have just given him the year off,
let him come back after the fact. He's a quarterback that he is not going to be at all one of these top five guys. That is not Tua. But when Tua came out, I kind of likened him, his game, not that he's the same player, but he's kind of one of these quarterbacks that needs that rhythm and that precision. He's more that. He was going to take a little bit of time. We saw somebody like Drew Brees come into the league and need a little bit of time before he was able to really find his game in the league as well. So I think Tua is going to be great this year. Not top five fantasy guy, anything like that. I think we're going to see really good things from him because of how they treated him this year. You have new coaching staff. You upgrade the offensive line. You bring in a stud tackle in Teron Armstead. And you do what some of these other teams did, where Josh Allen became Josh Allen when he got Stephon Diggs. And Kyler Murray had a great season when he finally got a DeAndre Hopkins there. Now you're giving Tua that big piece, that Tyreek Hill weapon. And if you want to go back even before Patrick Mahomes, go back to 2017, Tyreek Hill, a top five fantasy receiver with Alex Smith. So it wasn't like he needed Mahomes necessarily to be up in that range. It's going to be about volume. I think perhaps for me, the difference is that I look at a guy like Mike Gesicki as somebody that I think gets really hurt by this, because when all the guys have been healthy in the Miami offense, Gesicki is often someone that is really sporadic with his production. It's really hard to trust him. His biggest games often come when you had Devontae Parker sidelined or Preston Williams sidelined or whatever. And even looking at those names, I mean, compared to what they have now, my God, right? Like, the offense is going to be that much better, a better rushing attack there as well. Just overall, I'm much more excited about this offense maybe than other people, based on all the moves at almost every position that they've made this offseason. And I think when you put a talent like Tyreek in there, there's a reason why they did that. Now, Jalen Waddle still going to be a great player as well. I'm not discounting him, but I think Tyreek Hill came there for a reason, and it's to be their number one top guy.
All right, Andrew, you don't even have him as a wide receiver one. You've got him as wide receiver 15. It's funny, I'm right in between you guys. I have him at 12. So talk to me a little bit about this grade that you have him in right now. What is it you see that you bump him out of that number one wide receiver territory?
Well, I guess for me, I don't know if Tyreek Hill is the same guy that he was when he had Alex Smith. You know, he was 23 years old, so he was young and in his prime. And looking at last year, career lows in yards after the catch per reception, 42nd, and yards per out run at 11th at 2.14. So we're seeing a wide receiver that the Chiefs, you know, wanted to extend, and then ultimately were like, you know what, we're going to let you walk. You know, they have the best quarterback in the NFL, and they had him, you know, they let Tyreek Hill walk, and they didn't want to pay him. And look, we're talking about, okay, Tyreek Hill is going to be used behind the line of scrimmage. He's going to catch all these screen passes from Tua. Well, last year, he wasn't really that efficient after the catch. So is he just going to become more efficient after the catch? He'll get more, you know, underneath targets. He's getting older. And that's why, for me, I'm looking at Waddle. You know, Waddle coming out, I just comped to Tyreek Hill all the time. I was like, he's Tyreek Hill 2.0. And from what we saw his rookie year, yeah, the explosive downfield plays weren't there, but the yards after the catch was there for Waddle. You know, he was able to break the rookie receptions record. You know, he had a really high target share. Like, why are we not just buying into an ascending talent, a first-round rookie wide receiver that competed with actual wide receivers at Alabama? Who has Tyreek Hill ever competed with that wide receiver? No one. It's been Travis Kelce his entire career. There's never been another wide receiver that he's really had to compete for targets with. So for me, I view that the target share in this offense could be pretty even split between Tyreek Hill and Jalen Waddle. And if that's being considered, I'm going to take the cheaper guy. I think Waddle's more explosive at Tyreek Hill at this point in his career. And the other concern I have is the way this offense, you know, both these offenses last year, so the Chiefs and the Dolphins, were both very pass heavy. You know, despite what people say about Tua, like, they had an offense that threw the ball a ton. And that's, I don't imagine that's going to be the case here with Mike McDaniel. You know, when I look at Tua and a lot of the advanced metrics, a lot of it looks like Jimmy Garoppolo and a very low average depth of target. And we're going to reel
that's
it in.
That's not a good look.
And but that's what I mean. So yeah. I don't think we're going to see this pass happy offense, which is what happened with the Chiefs and Tyreek Hill last year. And even with Jalen Waddle. So I don't love really either player because of this offense. I think is going to rely on more run heavy approach. Mike McDaniel was a former run game coordinator. Like, he's not this pass game coordinator that's going to, all right, we're going to dice him up downfield. You know, it's going to be used behind the line of scrimmage. We're going to open up holes for our running backs. And I think that means we're going to see a lot of inconsistencies from these receivers. Now, if one of them goes down, oh my God, like, it's going to be the target floodgates are going to open for that one particular player. But they still have other talented guys on this roster. They signed Cedric Wilson. Is he just going to get zero targets? Is it just going to be Tyreek Hill and Waddle? I don't know the answer to that, but there's enough concerns for me that have me not wanting to overinvest in Hill, which is a projection. Like, everything with Hill and Tua is a projection, where I've already seen Jalen Waddle not only at the NFL level, but at the college level produce. So I just feel more confident taking Waddle a little bit later on.
All right, let's move on to the next guy, Deontay Johnson. Boone, you have him at wide receiver 15. Erickson has him at 21. So you both have him in that wide receiver 2 range. But Boone, talk to me about why you think that despite the change in quarterback here year over year for the Pittsburgh Steelers, that Deontay Johnson, whether it be Trubisky or Pickett, can stay hovering around that wide receiver 1A territory.
Well, this is one that I don't feel great about. So I might just cede the win to Andrew here. I don't know, but I see, you know, Deontay Johnson is a strong talent in my mind. You know, he backed that up last year, over 1,100 yards, 8 touchdowns, top 10 among qualified fantasy receivers and points per game. And I say qualified because, like, we had a couple guys. There was like Christian Wilkerson was up there with like one big game. And then we had like Cyril Grayson was kind of in the teens at some point. So I constantly kind of bump those guys out when I'm citing those numbers. But there are a lot of moving pieces in this offense. And one of them is the quarterback situation that, yeah, it's a little worrisome, maybe less so when you think about Ben Roethlisberger and kind of how bad he's been the last couple of years, that even if it is a Trubisky Pickett combo, that maybe the drop-off isn't going to be as much, or maybe there won't even be a drop-off, to be honest, with how bad Ben looked in some of those games. Where I am a little hesitant is the target competition. And it's not that I'm in love with Chase Claypool, to be honest, but they went out and got a guy in George Pickens that I think is going to be a future star. He mm-hmm. was a guy that was hurt last year for most of the season, came back at the end of the year, but isn't one of these guys like a John Mechie or like a Jameson Williams that is hurt and going to miss time. He came back at the end of the last season. So he hit the ground running in OTAs. He was getting a ton of praise from beat writers and from teammates. I really think this guy is going to be a future star. Now, whether that happens this year, whether it happens next year, we'll see what happens with Deontay's contract at that point. Maybe that would really unlock Pickens. But just the fact that now they have a competent third receiver in that offense to go along with Pat Freiermuth at tight end, who broke out last year as a rookie that we don't see a lot of tight ends do. And I don't think Najee's going to get anywhere near the amount of targets and catches that he had last season. I think that was a lot of Ben drop, dump offs, but he's also a guy that can catch passes out of the backfield. So I think there's a lot of target competition here. That's the reason that I'm a little bit worried about him in this situation, but I do think he's a great receiver. And I think there's a chance that, like I said, maybe that Pickens blow up doesn't come until closer to the end of the year or next year. And we still see a pretty good season out of Deontay.
I'm with you. I'm a big Pickens guy too. And you really see his full potential all the time at Georgia because they were just so far ahead all the time. They just ran the football and played defense down people's throats because they had all these leads at all moments. But Pickens is certainly something to consider in the latter part of the year. Now, Andrew, you're a little lower on Deontay Johnson. So what affirmation have you come to here when you've looked at the stats where you feel like, yeah, I can't put him as high as 15?
Well, part of it's just my hesitancy to buy into the Steelers offense, you know, whoever the quarterback is, like whether it's an upgrade or not from Ben Roethlisberger. Like I thought Justin Fields was an upgrade from other Bears quarterbacks for Allen Robinson, and that didn't matter because it was bad. So I don't know if the fall off is going to be as bad, but I think that the issue is, you know, how often are the Steelers going to throw the ball? You know, with Big Ben, they were throwing the ball at the second highest rate over the last two seasons. So they had no problem throwing it. And when you talk about Deontay Johnson, you know, if you play a word associate game, you're like, Deontay Johnson, first thing that comes to mind, targets, because that's what he's been. Like, he's just been a target monster over the last two seasons with Big Ben. It's a whole new different quarterback now. Whether that quarterback is more efficient or not, that's not the reason we wanted Deontay Johnson. That's not the reason Deontay Johnson's been a good fantasy player. He's been good because he's been getting a lot of volume. And I think that the overall passing volume in this offense is going to come down. You look at 2019, the last time Big Ben missed basically the entire season, the Steelers were 23rd in pass play rate. Nobody on that offense saw more than 100 targets. Now, I don't think it's going to be that low. And I think that Deontay Johnson is a better player than he was in 2019. But I look at Johnson's, you know, archetype, and it's like, okay, like this is a wide receiver that projects to lead his team in targets. Here's a list of guys that I think could lead their team in targets realistically that go later than him. Brandon Cooks, Darnell Mooney, Christian Kirk, Jacoby Myers, Alan Lazard. Like, those are all guys that, I mean, how, like, what's the big difference, I guess? Like, from a talent perspective, okay, yeah, I think Deontay is better than all those guys. But for the price I have to pay to get him versus I just want a guy that's going to get a lot of targets in an inefficient passing game, points, all right, sign me up for some of these guys.
Right. Yeah, points are points. Doesn't mean if they're ugly points, they're still points. All right, DK Metcalf. Here's another big divide here on this one. Erickson, you've got him at wide receiver 25, DK Metcalf at 16. You know, your rankings are very old and curmudgeon-y here, Erickson. You're just down on everybody, which is great. I love it. I love it when the young guy is down on everyone and negative. And DK Metcalf, I understand. I mean, is it just as simple as Drew Lock, or is there even more to this ranking?
I think it's as simple as that. Look, there are just quarterbacks that just crater fantasy production. And I get that we want to believe in Metcalf as the talent of the player. But when you play wide receiver, you are reliant on who's throwing you the football. And I saw what Drew Lock did last year. And I saw, and I've seen what Geno Smith has done throughout his years in the NFL. And yeah, I know that DK Metcalf had a 3-game sample size with Geno Smith where he was fine. Do you really want to extrapolate that over a 16 or 17 game season and project, oh yeah, DK Metcalf, he'll be totally fine. Like, I don't want my wide receivers to be fine. I want my wide receivers to thrive. And Metcalf in Seattle with his quarterback situation is not that guy. You know, we're talking about all these wide receivers we're hoping are going to rebound this year. Cortland Sutton, Allen Robinson. You know, why are they rebounding? Because they had bad years. Well, that's going to be Metcalf this year. Like, we're going to talk about him next year. It's like, oh, can he bounce back with a new situation, a new quarterback? Because, you know, his production, 32 touchdowns over the last three seasons. That's really been his calling card, has been the TDs. How many touchdowns are the Seahawks going to score this year? And then we're going to go to the target share in this offense. He has the exact same target share as Tyler Lockett over the past two seasons. Tyler Lockett's going outside the top 40 wide receivers. So, Joe, I mean, if you got to get a piece of the Seahawks offense, just take Tyler Lockett much later on. He's going to play just as much. He's got the same upside from a downfield, you know, wide receiver archetype. And for me, you know, it took me a lot of convincing, but I would rather have Gabriel Davis than DK Metcalf this year. You know, Davis outscored Metcalf over the last 8 weeks of the second half of last year. Davis was on a snap count. Metcalf saw 30 more targets, and yet Gabriel Davis was still better. So give me Gabriel Davis in the Bills offense over DK Metcalf in the Seahawks offense with Drew Lock / Geno Smith.
All right, Boone, you've got DK at wide receiver 16. Did you watch Drew Lock play football last year?
Yes. Two things that I want to say off the top. One, I think Andrew's just trying to win me over, the Bills fan in me, by talking up Gabe Davis.
Yes,
I love hearing
that.
It doesn't help. It doesn't
love hearing that.
Excuse me to choose the guest once.
Also,
in a while,
truth be told, since I sent you my rankings, I've been working on the next update, and I did move DK down a few spots. Not as far down as Andrew has him, but I did move him down a few spots. And I don't want to bury him completely because he's shown us that he can be dominant at times. I mean, you look, he's just 1 year removed from 1,300 yards and double-digit touchdowns, right? Like, he has that in him. And there's not that many receivers in the NFL that have that in them, regardless of who their quarterback is. But I think right now, one of the biggest things that I'm just holding on to here is just hoping that we see a situation kind of like we saw in Carolina, where you get Baker Mayfield showing up, and Mayfield will be a little bit of an improvement on Sam Darnold, I think. You know, it's not going to be massive. It's not like a Russell Wilson kind of thing showing up, but maybe we see Jimmy Garoppolo end up in Seattle. And we had Jeremy Fowler of ESPN say, he reported that the Seahawks were doing their due diligence, that they were doing their homework on Jimmy G. And really, when you look at kind of the game of musical chairs out there for quarterbacks, it's kind of the last spot remaining. I know there's been talk of Tampa, and maybe he could go to the Browns with the Watson potential suspension and stuff, but really, Seattle is the team that needs him desperately. I don't know that the 49ers would trade him in the division, so might be a situation where they, if they have to release him outright, and then Seattle gets him at that point. But yeah, I think he's going to need a big touchdown total to really have a quality fantasy season. So yeah, I have him as that low end, you know, wide receiver 2 in that range, but it wouldn't shock me if it ends up worse. And one of the biggest things, Andrew, you mentioned it, as much as he kept up those numbers, they were okay in that stretch with Geno, watching that offense during those games, because truth be told, I have one deep dynasty league where I didn't have a great quarterback too. I had injuries, and I actually had to pick up Geno Smith and play him. I went on to win the title in that league, shockingly, but those games were awful. As a fantasy manager, you do not want to be watching that Seattle Seahawks offense if it's Drew Lock or if it's Geno Smith under center this year.
All right, last guy here. Finally found somebody that Andrew Erickson likes. Michael Pittman Jr., you have him at wide receiver 13. Boone's just behind you a little bit at wide receiver 17. So I know you've talked about him a lot, so I don't want to go too far because I know everybody's heard you talk about Pittman before, but give me at least, you know, that quick, hey, I believe in Pittman at wide receiver 13 with upside because why?
Yeah, I believe that he has, you know, wide receiver 1 upside basically because he's the true alpha in that offense. You know, he got the alpha treatment last year. He was third in route participation, so he's always on the field. And you look at who else is in that Colts offense. Okay, you have Alec Pierce, you know, a rookie. They have Paris Campbell, who can't stay healthy. You have some interesting tight ends, Mo Alie-Cox. But you have Matt Ryan, and that's the biggest thing. You know, Matt Ryan has historically shown that he can fuel wide receiver 1s in fantasy. Like, that's such a big thing that I've really kind of gravitated towards in my research, where it's like the quarterback play matters so much for some of these receivers, because some quarterbacks just can't get it done for the receivers to hit a certain ceiling. Now, the only thing that would be holding me back from Pittman, I guess, if I'm going to play devil's advocate for my own ranking is, you know, does Michael Pittman fall victim of the receiver that Matt Ryan never throws touchdowns to? Like, that's kind of the only way I see Pittman not at least hitting into the top 12 wide receivers. Just like, oh, he catches like four touchdowns because Matt Ryan just like doesn't connect with him in the end zone, or just, it's Jonathan Taylor just scoring a bunch of rushing touchdowns again.
All right, so you've got him over here, Boone, at wide receiver 17. So still a pretty strong ranking. Still feel like a lot of belief in Pittman, but a little lower than Erickson. So talk to me about your thoughts on Pittman for this 2022 season.
Yeah, this one's kind of like the Javonte conversation we had before. We were fairly close on him. You're kind of splitting hairs a little bit when it's only a few spots. But when you look at Pittman, so last year, wide receiver 26 in points per game and half PPR. Wide receiver 24 when we kick out Wilkerson and Cyril Grayson again. We'll get rid of those guys. But he did that with not very much target competition. I mean, T.Y. Hilton basically completely disappeared last year. Zach Pascal was their second receiver. You had Nyheim Hines was number three, I think, in targets on the team. Pittman had 129 targets, and the next closest was 69. And I'm looking at it, and I know Andrew rattled off the names, but I'm looking at it. I kind of like some of the other players that they have this year. Like, you look at Alec Pierce, a guy they go out and get in the second round. They spend up some significant draft capital to get him. And he's a guy that I think he could emerge as a quality starter. I think he's a pretty good contested catch receiver, really great kind of high pointing the ball. So maybe going to be a threat in the red zone, going back to your thing of, uh-oh, is Matt Ryan not going to throw the touchdowns to Pittman this year? I know we've heard it before, the Paris Campbell thing, all the talk in the offseason practices.
No, it's like Voldemort. You can't say that name on this podcast.
I'm still holding out hope for him. I think the talent's there, and you just hope that it's maybe like a Keenan Allen situation, that early in the career he's got these injuries and somehow he overcomes it. But I know that is definitely a long shot.
Keenan Allen and Paris Campbell in the same sentence together. Did you just do that?
Definitely, definitely a long shot. But I think Campbell could still do something this season, and could be a guy that gets a lot of work out of the slot too if he can't stay healthy. Carson Wentz last year didn't really throw to his running backs. Matt Ryan, I think, will throw the running backs a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And there's talk, like I said, Nyheim Hines could be more involved in the offense this season because of it. He could siphon some more targets. And then we land on Matt Ryan. And I know, Andrew, you said historically Matt Ryan this and Matt Ryan that. Is he the same Matt Ryan, though? I really don't think he is. I know there were rumors when Julio wanted out of Atlanta that part of the reason was because Julio didn't think Matt Ryan had the same arm. I'm a little bit worried from what we've seen from Matt Ryan. I know the offense in Atlanta was not great.
To throw the ball when you're on your back. I mean, that offensive line in Atlanta was so bad last year, man.
But you look at, I mean, just the first season in over a decade that he was under 4,000 passing yards, and he had the extra game to try to get there. So I think we're going to see Matt Ryan come in and kind of do a Philip Rivers kind of impression, what Philip Rivers did when he was with the Colts. I don't think it's going to be peak Matt Ryan. I think he's going to come in, he's going to keep the offense moving, but really Jonathan Taylor is the thing that's going to fuel that attack. And I don't know that Pittman is going to get the kind of targets that he needs to put up a top 12 season. I think he's still going to be good. Like we said, with my ranking, I just don't see a lot of space for him to move up significantly to get into that wide receiver one range.
He's Justin Boone, president of the Paris Campbell Fan Club. You can find him on the Twitter machine at Justin Boone. And of course, check out all of his fantastic work at The Score. Again, one of the best minds in fantasy football, bar none. And one of my favorite people to talk football with and just talk with. He's fun to be in leagues with. He's fun to have on the pod. Boone, I know how busy you are this time of year. I want to thank you again for spending some time with us and our audience here. And of course, by our audience, I'm talking to you all right now. The Cheat Sheet Creator is available at fantasypros.com/draftwizard, an amazing tool that lets you have us in your draft with you. You can use that expert sync feature to make sure the cheat sheets are automatically updating with those players that you've chosen and their updated rankings, wherever those experts are. Every time we make a move, you're going to have updated cheat sheets to go ahead, whether it be in your mock drafts or your real drafts. And of course, if you go to fantasypros.com/offers, we have the offers for you to get your 12 free months access to our premium features and content. That gives you extra stuff at Fantasy Pros on the football draft kit, the fantasy draft kit we have out there right now that's available for free, but you get more access to that. You get all of our in-season management tools, our DFS tools. You get so much for free just for going to make a deposit and playing some more fantasy football, playing some DFS, making some wagers. It's all right there, fantasypros.com/offers. Find the right offer for you, and then go ahead and unlock all of the cheat codes that we have for you here at fantasypros.com. I want to remind everybody, too, if you want more access to our analysts, make sure you head over to fantasypros.com/chat, because, again, as a premium subscriber, you get access to a lot more channels. It's free to join our Discord, but if you want to be a premium member and use one of those offers, you can join our Discord and get a hold of us on the AMAs, on the stages where we interact with you live. It's just like a radio call-in show. Talk about your drafts. Talk about your strategies. Talk about your teams in season. We're here for you over at fantasypros.com/chat on our Discord. I want to thank the sponsors of today's show, including Pristine Auction. Head over to pristineauction.com today and make sure you use that promo code FANTASYPROS to get $10 on us and start your bidding for the coolest swag at pristineauction.com. And don't forget, visit airmedcarenetwork.com/fantasypros and use the offer code FANTASYPROS. No matter where you are in the game of life, an Air Medcare Network membership is a protection no one should live without. That'll do it for us, but the story of the game goes on. For Andrew Erickson and Justin Boone, I'm Joey P. We'll see you next time, kids.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Pros Football Podcast. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at Fantasy Pros and subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/fantasypros.
I'm Diosa.
And I'm Mala.
We are the creators of Locatora Radio, a radiophonic novela, which is a fancy way of saying
a podcast. Welcome to Locatora Radio, Season 9.
Love at first listen.
We're older, we're wiser, and we're podcasting through a new decade of our lives.
This season, we're falling in love with podcasting all over again.
And getting to the heart of our stories.
We're going places we've never gone before, and we're bringing you along with us.
With new segments, correspondence, and a brand new sound.
Season 9 is kicking off with an intimate interview with Grammy Award-winning singer-songwriter Natalia Lafourcade. What's giving you hope right now?
Well, when I see what music does to people, it gives me a lot of hope.
If you liked Locatora before, you're gonna love Season 9.
Subscribe to our show and you'll see why Locatora is your prima's favorite podcast.
Listen to Locatora Radio as part of the Michael Tura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge Podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge Podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Carol G.
Juan Gabriel.
Christina Aguilera.
What do these three have in common?
You mean apart from impeccable style, chart-topping canciones, and drama?
Facts, yes, all of the above are correct, but most importantly, they're some of the biggest Latin icons in the world. And they're just a few of the game-changing Latin stars we're covering in Becoming an Icon Season 2. Listen to Becoming an Icon on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.